Anusha and Sare always dreamed of traveling into space.
It started when I was very young in Iran, and I basically fell in love with the stars. I used to sleep outside on my grandparents' balcony at nights, just looking at the night skies and seeing all those wonderful shining stars made me want to be closer to them. I looked at the stars and I felt the answers to life's most important questions are out there.
Years later, Anusha Ansari fulfilled her dream, became the first Muslim woman to venture into space. But it wasn't easy. Her family left Iran shortly after the revolution in 1979 and moved to America. Eventually, she married and, with her husband, built up a telecommunications company, which they ended up selling for more than $500 million. The money gave Ansari the chance to chase her lifelong ambition, a trip into space, on board the International Space Station. Ansari writes about her journey in the book My Dream of Stars. Her first step was to train with a group of Russian cosmonauts.
So the training is about 6 months full-time, pretty much in Star City, which is a military base close to Moscow, and that's where all the cosmonauts and astronauts train. You have to pre-qualify for the training.
You have to prove that you're physically able to withstand it, I suppose.
Yes. The Russians were actually not very especially happy to have a woman in the program. So they tried hard to discourage me and disqualify me, but I was determined that I'm not going home. So I stayed and I pushed through it.
They tried all sorts of things, I gather, including the centrifuge that sends you around and around. You spin until you're just about ready to pass out.
Yes, the centrifuge actually was one of the pre-qualification tests. And usually what they do is they do a run. They go up to 4 Gs, which is 4 times the force of gravity. And before they started the test, they said they decided to ramp it up to 9 Gs. And I was scared, but I didn't let my fears to show. And I said, okay, fine, let's go, let's do it. So I went through it, and it was a difficult test. But fortunately, I actually made it through with flying colors and surprised and raised some eyebrows there. So it helped me actually to get through the program.
You were unusual in this program, not only a woman, and they hadn't been prepared to cope with that, but also you wanted to sew the flag of Iran on your spacesuit, and I gather that was not something that they were very happy about either.
Yes. Someone wrote an article and mentioned the fact that I was wearing the flag on my training suit. And right after that, I was told that I have to remove the flag. And I'm like, why is that? I mean, this is not something controversial. I wasn't advertising anything, and I was just wearing the colors of the flag.
But this was clearly important to you. You wanted to have those colors on your suit.
It absolutely was important because I wanted to make sure that I showed that I came from Iran, and I wanted to show the world a different image of Iranians because I was tired of seeing what's shown on TV all the time and what people perceive as an Iranian woman. And also, by that time, the word had gotten out about me being part of the space flight, and millions of Iranians all over the world were so excited and so happy, and they're watching and they're following me. And I thought I was bringing a message that, I'm an Iranian who lives in America and I have made peace with both of these countries that are part of my life. And I was able to take the positives from both cultures and both countries.
But you were a practicing Muslim. The revolution, did it have an effect on your beliefs?
I should say that it didn't necessarily have an impact on my true belief in the spiritual nature of our universe. It had an impact on some of the practices, on some of the things I saw, and how sometimes religion is used to manipulate people in doing things that are not necessarily the teachings of that specific religion.
You were drawing a lot of attention from both Iranians at home in Iran, but also around the world. Did your trip draw a lot of attention in the rest of the Muslim world?
It did, especially women. Muslim women were very excited and happy. It was sort of not only a positive image for women in Iran, but also positive image of Muslim women all over the world.
We've talked about all of the work that you put into making it possible to be a part of this trip, but not about the trip itself. You spent, what was it, 11 days in space, and that was 2006. What was it like?
It was absolutely wonderful, just best experience I've ever had in my life. It was just amazing, the experience of being able to see Earth from space. It was just breathtaking and an image that has stayed with me and will stay with me forever. And it changes the way you see your life and basically you see the universe and your role in it.
In spiritual terms, clearly it was enormously valuable to you, but there is another part of it. I mean, it wasn't all easy, was it? You were sick the first day you were up in space. I guess that's not at all uncommon.
Yes. The body goes through a lot of changes being in the microgravity of space. So the first 2 days, my body was going through this adjustment. So I had the first thing that most people suffer from is difficulties with their vestibular system that causes nausea. So I forgot all my training and I was so excited in the capsule the first day that I kept flying all over the place and flipping around, and that did it. And I got very sick and had to take some medication for that, which made me drowsy. But then also you get headache because the fluid in your body shifts up to your head and puts a lot of pressure on your sinuses. And also because your spine starts stretching, you actually become taller in space, which is great because I'm a short person. But also it puts a lot of strain on your lower back, so you get lower back pain.
Was this the hardest part of the trip?
Not really. I would say the hardest part was the landing. You know, the Soyuz capsule is pretty much like the Apollo capsules, but it's smaller. And instead of landing in water, it lands on the ground. So the impact of landing is pretty hard, and it really shakes you up. It feels like being in a car crash. So I would say that part probably was the hardest.
What was the most memorable part of the trip for you?
I would say seeing Earth for the first time, because it was very emotional for me. And up to that point, I didn't believe or realize that this all was happening and I am in space. But once I saw Earth from space and I was able to feel sort of the warmth and the energy of it, it's when it clicked that I'm actually here, I'm in space, and I have realized my dream and something that I talked about it all my life. It was happening to me, and it was a very, very special moment.
Anousheh Ansari is the author of the memoir, My Dream of Stars, From Daughter of Iran to Space Pioneer. Once you start digging into questions about science and Islam, you'll soon run across the name of Harun Yahya, the leading creationist in the Muslim world. Now, I should mention that Yahya gets some seriously bad press in the West. He's a shadowy figure who was sentenced to 3 years in jail for extortion and running a crime gang, a conviction he's now appealing. So it may be tempting to dismiss him as a crackpot. But Yahya runs a sophisticated media empire that distributes books, videos, and websites around the Islamic world. Put it simply, his network has considerable influence. Steve Paulson traveled to Turkey to meet with Harun Yahya and some of his critics, and has this report.
You might think creationism is a distinctly American phenomenon, but creationist beliefs are also widespread throughout the Muslim world, and no one has done more to spread the anti-evolution gospel than Harun Yahya.
So right now, Harun Yahya is a global phenomenon in the Islamic world. You find Harun Yahya books in Islamic bookstores in London. You find Harun Yahya conference series in Indonesia. You find Harun Yahya books showing up as textbooks in Pakistani schools.
That's Tanner Edis, a Turkish-American physicist at Truman State University in Missouri. He says Harun Yahya's group, what's called the Science Research Foundation, has the kind of money and influence that American creationists can only dream of.
Harun Yahya has been able to sort of saturate Turkish media at certain times with a kind of a creationist message, and this is something that American creationists would very much like to do, but they just can't.
A few years ago, Harun Yahya made a splash with a glossy 13-pound, 800-page book called Atlas of Creation. His group mailed the book to at least 10,000 scientists, museums, and research centers in Europe and across the United States.
They must be 14 inches tall. I mean, it's just this huge, huge format, and it's about 4 inches thick and glossy paper, and it's sort of a velvet cover. I mean, there must be tons of money going into printing this thing.
Eugenie Scott works at the National Center for Science Education, which tracks creationist groups.
And it's expensive to ship. One of the professors who received a copy is a friend of mine. Checked back on the bill of lading and found the shipping company, and, you know, it cost like $11 just to ship this thing.
Just where he gets his money is one of the many mysteries that surrounds Harun Yahya. No one knows, though speculation runs from Saudi donors to wealthy Turks whose children have joined his secretive network. Harun Yahya lives in Istanbul, the sprawling metropolis that stands at the crossroads between Europe and Asia. Before I interviewed him, I talked with some well-connected journalists, academics, and businessmen, members of the secular elite, to get their impressions of this man. Harun Yahya is actually the pen name for Adnan Oktar, and it's clear he has both powerful friends and enemies. I asked the editor-in-chief of CNN Turk, Ferhat Boratov, what he thinks of Harun Yahya.
He is a very shadowy figure. We don't know much about his life. We don't know much about where this money comes from. And we will probably not know more about him in the foreseeable future.
Ishak Alatan is a prominent businessman who runs the Alarko Holdings Company in Istanbul. He describes Harun Yahya as a man who preys on the weaknesses of other people.
A man who has found a way of manipulating simple people. He's just a fake, a charlatan, a man who I wouldn't even consider dangerous because he has no impact.
That relatively benign view of Harun Yahya's influence is not shared by some of his other critics, like Soli Özel, a professor of international relations at Istanbul University. He says Yahya's group functions like a cult.
He's really bad news. His organization entraps men and women. I've had a student who's been entrapped by them, and it's very difficult to get out.
How so? What do they do?
You get implicated in many things, and you really cannot leave. They may be putting pressure on you, on your family. I mean, this student of mine, when she took her exams, there would be the two guys, you know, standing guard, so she wouldn't speak to anyone and all that. So obviously, these are not methods that I can approve or like.
No matter what people think of Harun Yahya, it's clear that Islamic creationism has exploded in Turkey. Just why is a complicated story that may have as much to do with politics as religion. Unlike many Muslim countries, which simply ignore the science of life's origins, Turkey's high schools have taught evolution for decades, the legacy of Atatürk's campaign to secularize Turkey's public culture. Now, creationists are striking back at the country's secular power brokers. The Quran doesn't have a detailed origin story like the 6 days of creation found in Genesis, but it does say Adam was created out of clay in a heavenly paradise and later banished to earth. Many Turkish critics of evolution, including Harun Yahya, don't actually have a problem with the universe being nearly 14 billion years old, but they can't stomach the idea that humans descended from apes. And some government officials in the AKP, the ruling Islamic party, openly criticize evolution. In Ankara, I talked with the government's point man on religious issues, Mehmet Görmez.
Yani inanç konusu yaratılışla başlayan bir konudur.
In fact, the belief starts with the creation.
Eğer siz inançlı Allah'a inanıyorsanız,
if you believe in God,
öncelikle Allah'ın sizi yarattığına inanacaksınız.
You have to first believe that God created you.
Bütün dini metinler, bütün ilahi metinlerde insanın yaratıcı tarafından, Allah tarafından yaratıldığını söyler.
All the holy texts says that human beings are created by a holy force, God.
Ben evrim teorisinin de bilimsel bir konu değil, ideolojik bir konu olduğunu düşünüyorum.
I think that evolution theory is not a scientific one, but an ideological one.
Back in Istanbul, I had no idea what to expect from my interview with Harun Yahya. Late one night, I was driven to an ultra-chic modern house on the Asian side of the city. Glass doors led out to a swimming pool, and a huge flat-screen TV hung over the living room. The biggest surprise was to find that I'd walked onto a stage set. Klieg lights beamed down on our interview chairs, and several men were there to operate the three video cameras. It turned out I wasn't the only one taping this interview. Harun Yahya is a burly man in his mid-50s. He has slicked back hair and a carefully trimmed beard, and wore his trademark white suit with a black T-shirt. He was gracious throughout our interview, though many of his comments surprised me, to say the least. I asked, how could so many evolutionary biologists be wrong?
Dünyada masonların yönetiminde bir Darwinist diktatörlük kuruldu, bilimsel bir diktatörlük kuruldu.
Well, we need to talk about Mason's role here, because Masons managed the world through a scientific dictatorship. When you look at universities today, many academicians are forced to believe in Darwinism, because if they do not believe in Darwinism, they are just sent out of the academies or universities, and no one shows them respect.
I think it would surprise a lot of scientists in America to hear that they are being controlled, if that's the right word, by Masons. What makes you say that Masons have so much influence on scientific discussion?
Today, when you look at the rectors, deans, professors, scientific men, doctors, and even people working in police departments, many of them are Masons and members of some Masonic lodges, and their essential characteristic is that they act secretly and they are invisible.
I asked Harun Yahya about his legal troubles. A few years ago, he was convicted of extortion and running a criminal gang, a conviction he's now appealing. Some years back, he'd also been charged with drug possession and sexual assault, but both cases against him fizzled. Yahya told me that none of these charges has been proven, and that he and his friends had actually faced death threats.
If you were in that situation, and if you were given electricity, or if you were tortured, you would also sign the documents which were put in front of you, and this is what we did. We had no other chance, because we would be dead otherwise, so we had to sign the statements.
Harun Yahya said he's faced many assassination attempts, and he told a story about how he was once framed by a policeman who'd slipped cocaine into his kebab. So why, I asked him, has he been targeted? He said it's because he's fighting against Darwinism, communism, and other terrorist organizations.
Are you saying Darwinism is a terrorist organization?
Well, Darwinism can be defined as a kind of system which develops and nurtures terrorism all throughout the world. We can liken that to the development of mosquitoes in mud or in other ponds. So many fascist and communist leaders all around the world stated very clearly that they have been affected by the teachings and ideals of Darwinism.
I confess, it's hard to know what to make of this kind of anti-Darwinist rant, or even to understand how Harun Yahya has managed to spread his anti-evolution message to so many corners of the Muslim world. There was one more thing I wanted to do before I left Istanbul, to find out what the next generation of Turks thinks about evolution. So I went to Sabancı University and talked with some of the students there. It was only a small sampling, but I came away thinking that many of these students really are determined to learn about science and evolution.
I am interested in evolution.
Yeah, I know it contradicts with religion, but I mean, for me, religion is something else.
As a new PhD student, I would say it is at least good to have several explanations how people evolved. For example, the Holy Book says is also another possibility. I would not be too harsh on any of them.
In Turkey, 99% of people are Muslims. I think that's the reason why a majority doesn't believe in evolution and Darwinism.
So you think you kind of have to choose between science or religion?
The majority of people believe so. I don't believe that way.
People just don't want to look at apes and say, you know, yeah, we have descended from those, that's gross, you know. It's striking that whether Muslim or Christian, all conservatives, when it comes to their points of view regarding the evolution, they all say, okay, it's not possible. There's this consensus that I find really amazing.
Steve Paulson prepared that report on Harun Yahya. Steve traveled to Turkey as part of the International Reporting Project's Gatekeepers trip, which is supported by Johns Hopkins School of Advanced International Studies. Coming up, the profound insights of the Sufi mystic Rumi. For to the best of our knowledge, I'm Jim Fleming. This hour, Can Islam and Science Coexist? Is part of our special series, Science and the Search for Meaning, Five Questions, brought to you by Wisconsin Public Radio and PRI, Public Radio International.
Our series, Science and the Search for Meaning, Five Questions, is supported by grants from the John Templeton Foundation, supporting science, investing in the big questions, by Promega Corporation, providing tools and technologies for research in life science, and by the Neuer Foundation, exploring meaning and commonality of human experience.